How's it going, everybody? Welcome back into Debate Night. We are back for season three of at least this format of Debate Night. It's crazy that this is the third season doing this. We've got a great season ahead. We're going to be doing this all the way until October from now. So we've got lots of disc golf season to talk through. And yeah, if you've never seen the show, the way this works is basically we've got four analysts here who are going to critique and give their points for every single question we pose on the show, or I pose for them. They're going to go back and forth with each other. Some will agree, some will disagree, and they're going to earn points based on the clarity and skill of their arguments and their points. And the winner at the end of the show will be declared then on who has the most points. But I do have some exciting things to tell you about first. Number one, we love to introduce new cast members to the show each season. We've actually got one tonight, but we still have open auditions for this season. We have some new cast members already joining, but I want to make sure that the Debate Night faithful who watch the show get a chance to get on those auditions as well. So we'll have a link to a Google form in the description where you can send in an audition tape and throw your name in the hat to potentially be considered for the show. Another new thing I want to mention is I wanted to get the people involved with the voting and the points this year. And it's not super straightforward to do as we record the show, but I want to hear everybody's opinion and not just in the comment section. Sometimes it's hard to gather the consensus. So this year I wanted to introduce the People's Champion. And basically what's going to happen is each time this show goes live, you'll be able to find a poll on Instagram on our story that'll allow you to vote for who you think should have won that episode of Debate Night. And in case you think that I got it wrong, couldn't imagine such a scenario. But that way, it'll be fun to track how many times the opinion differs. Maybe it's somebody that I didn't even put into the final two that you thought should have won the show and had the best argument. So that should be fun. Keep an eye out on Instagram if you're watching the show now. That poll should be live or live shortly. But without further ado, let's introduce our analyst for today's show. As always, we've got Brody Smith in the top left.
Yeah, people's champion sounds kind of nice, but man of the people here. Back again. And I gotta say, you know, there was a little bit of a back and forth on the best disc golf podcast between Tour Life and Grip Locked. Obviously we know who won that, but I think potentially this might be the best disc golf podcast, and I'm excited to be back. I'm excited. We got some fresh blood, if you will. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that, but, I think that's probably better than the other alternative, but I'm excited to be back. It should be good, and I can't wait to go toe-to-toe with everyone.
Sounds great. Yeah, Man of the People, the shirt, it still exists. You can check that out.
Great shirt.
Anybody who didn't watch last season has not a clue. We're also joined by Gary, a pretty dominant cast member last year, back on the show. Out to get everybody again, Gary? Are we going to go undefeated this year?
You know what? We're not going to go undefeated. There's some really wonderful new people join the cast, and I hope they take it down. I'm here to drop some opinions and to maybe we'll get a little villain mode, Gary, this year. I don't know.
Oh, turning heel.
We'll see. No, super excited to be back. Love the show. Love disc golf. I'm a little sad that Brody didn't read comments from the last episode. That's not in brand with what he did last time. So.
You know. We're on to the future here, Gary.
Okay, all right. Hey,
what's the saying? Like, people like you until they start hating you. What's that? What's that Batman saying?
You either die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become a villain.
There you go.
I like Brody's version better. You either like you or people hate you, or they like you until they hate you.
It makes more sense. But they had to expand the movie out, make it longer.
Yeah, Hunter's back as well, of course.
Well, I have two problems with Gary. First, he stole my spot. So I'm okay with being blue this year as my color, but I was always orange. So that's interesting. Secondly, my other problem with Gary is he apparently is only threatened by the new people when, I'm right here, Gary. So I didn't go anywhere. I still plan to be a threat.
You're going behind me, so it's okay.
Yeah, I feel like the orange was kind
of... I still can't see my score. This is crazy.
What are you talking about?
It's 2025. This is wild.
You don't like your color?
You don't like the green?
I love green. I should be in black. Maybe my name should be in black.
We told Silas to make it lighter. That's not real.
Okay.
You can darken it back.
Yeah, fix it in post. Fix it in post.
There you go.
No, you can fix it right now.
Oh, okay.
Did you read it now? Do you realize now is that better?
I mean, it's better,
great now.
I don't know if that's like a good analogy.
Hey, and lastly, we are joined today by Hannah, brand new to the show. Hannah, tell us about your disc golf history and what you're going to bring to the show this season.
Yeah, well, first, I'm really honored and excited to be here. I started playing disc golf in 2011 with my youth group, but did not even know the Pro Tour existed till 2020. So then I kind of am trying to do my part to grow the sport of disc golf and became like a super fan. So I'm very excited to be here. Hopefully I bring some good takes and don't come across too nervous.
Hey, good takes, bad takes. We'll take them all here. Brody, yeah. What do you have to say already?
Can I ask a question to Hannah?
Sure.
I just got to ask, why the heck did you want to come on this show?
Well, I think it might be the best disc golf podcast out there.
I mean, it's a fair question. It's a fair question.
It's a fair question. It is one of my favorite disc golf podcasts. I wanted to come on last season, actually, but I was pregnant like all of last year, and that just did not work out. So this year I wanted to come on just because it challenges me and puts me out there in ways like way outside of my comfort zone. But I love talking about disc golf, and I talk about it all the time. So here I am.
That's a great answer. Give her
take
one invisible point to you, Hannah.
All right.
A Brody point. Can we have Brody point tracker? Can Ooh, Brody points. This year? We can get Brody points.
Yeah, I don't even want to try to keep track of that. All right, well, we're going to hop into our first topic. Let's get into it. You know, enough of this chummy, you know, introduction stuff. Let's get into the, you know, the
I still have issues topics. With Gary, and I'm excited to go toe-to-toe.
Okay. Yes. So we're going to do this episode. We're going to be talking a lot about the offseason because there's a lot that we missed since we last talked to you in October. So we're going to be hitting a lot of the highlights of the offseason. Next season, we'll kind of be hitting the season preview before we get into current events. But we're going to start off here. With some offseason topics. Firstly, a large theme of the 2024 offseason was financial troubles, roster shakeups, and uncertainty in the sport of disc golf. Do you think this is rock bottom with a rebound in the near future, or is the sport still positioned to sink further before finding its footing? Brody Smith, what do you think?
Guys, gotta elevate, gotta innovate. We're bringing a new prop to the game. It is called a calculator. A calculator has now been added. Because here's something that I don't know if some companies did, where you go, okay, if we need to pay someone $1 million and we are going to make, let's say $15 a disc, and you just do the division, you realize you have to sell 66,000 plus discs. I don't know if people are doing the calculations, but I think that was a big issue that we had. I think we saw a lot of people with big eyes seeing discs just fly off the shelves and not realizing the reason discs were flying off the shelves was there's a huge influx of people coming in and the supply had not met the demand. And so I think one of the financial issues and roster shakeups and all the stuff that we saw over these last couple of years is just people starting to realize there are some people that are absolutely useless when it comes to selling discs. And there's also some companies that I think are starting to realize that their market share is vanishing very quickly. And so I think we're seeing a lot of people kind of change and move forward. And, you know, it can always get worse, right? But I think right now we're moving in the right direction.
Okay. Yeah. Valid points for sure. Gary, what are your thoughts?
You know, I think this question is a result of our desire to make things a really big deal. We say stuff like greatest off season ever and disc golf has hit rock bottom. But what we're really seeing here is the purse tightening and disc sales are down because people aren't at home with stimulus checks in their pockets anymore. COVID bubbles burst and we're kind of level setting to a new normal. And with that process, you get to see how companies prepared for this inevitability. Innova, they tried to play chess with their sponsorships. They took the slow and steady approach, and now they exist with a solid team, minus a few stars, of course. And plastic is, you know, moving okay theoretically. Discraft, they were more aggressive. They tried harder with their team marketing. They grabbed some bigger names, and now they're positioned to make power moves. Prodigy, on the other hand, put all the responsibility on their players. They got involved in some negative PR situations, whether it was their fault or not. They had a change of leadership, and now they have a poor image in the mind of their consumers, and they have a band-aid team with a few people who are talented on it. For, you know, House of Disc stuff, they made giant money moves. Companies like Dynamic failed to evolve. They overcharged their consumers. They lost their big name player. And now they're rostering the replacements of the replacements. This isn't the rock bottom of disc golf. This is just an environment that's been created by an influx of capital and consumers that is now shrinking back to reality. That's business. We're seeing how well each company did, who saw the writing on the wall, and who prepared for rain. And those who did are going to succeed, and those who didn't, they lost market share, and they may not be here in 5 years.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt about that. Definitely, definitely getting a preview into where companies were laying their assets and moving things around at this point. Hunter, what do you make of all this?
Yeah, you know, I'm actually, so there's kind of like an A or B option in this, right? A, do we think this is rock bottom, or B, is it positioned to sink farther? I'm gonna go with C. I think rock bottom was a few years ago, to be honest with you, and I think what we're actually seeing is the repercussions of that coming to light. I think that Dynamic Disc didn't just wake up this year and all of a sudden are in financial trouble. Instead, I think the rock bottom post-COVID was actually probably like 2022 range. And now we're seeing they just kept pouring out money into contracts, as Brody said, that they weren't able to make up. They kept making decisions, trying to correct the ship. A lot of companies are doing that. And now we're seeing the fruits of that come to light, which is making people feel like, oh my word, disc golf slipping, disc golf's falling. I was talking to someone high up in disc golf. I've talked to two people very high up in disc golf, and both of
them. Name drop.
I won't, in case they didn't want it out there, but both of them have a similar feeling of, if this was a sport-wide issue, you would be going to your courses and they would be empty. But for us, and for a lot of people, you go to your courses, it's the same as it was in 2023. It's better, more people out there than it was in 2019, and that's with more courses. So we're at a higher level than pre-COVID. Also, I think there's two other things to consider. One, the purchasing history pattern of a disc golfer is a lot higher. You're going to buy a lot more plastic when you're first getting into the sport. A lot of people have mellowed out. And two, it's not just a disc golf problem as much as it's an economy problem, which also could level out. So I think the actual rock bottom was probably 2 years ago.
Bad economy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's absolutely right.
Politics.
Yeah. There has to be some burden on the economy for sure. All right, Hannah, wrap this one up for us. What are you making of the financial troubles of disc golf? Where do you see the landscape?
Yeah. So those are all really good points. And I kind of agree with Gary too on the whole stimulus check thing. I have never felt in any of this that disc golf was at rock bottom or close to it. I think it's just kind of finding a plateau after the bubble. But I want to look at a few stats. So if we look at AltiWorld's 2024 fandom survey, we can estimate the portion of disc golf market that is taken up by disc golfers who purchase the most discs. A little over 3% of respondents appear to capture around 27% of the market, which means 3 out of 100 respondents are purchasing around 27 out of 100 discs. The next number is 7% of respondents capture about 19% of the market. That means if this survey is representative of all disc golfers, then we could estimate that nearly half of discs sold go to just 10% of all disc golfers. So this answers the question, because these loyalists aren't just going to disappear just because the economy gets weird or the COVID bubble has burst. So they were part of the reason that we saw a bubble in 2020 and 2021 in the first place. They probably had a bigger impact on that than new players did. Maybe because there were less things to do, maybe because they did have stimulus checks to spend, so more money just went to disc golf. So if disc golf consumption is going to continue to grow, it needs to convert more of its base to consume like these loyalists, or just create more loyalists. Why cater to 90% when you can have 10% do the heavy lifting of 90?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's similar to a lot of industry. And I think that the purchaser pattern that Hunter was mentioning too, that is a big part of this, where, you know, not only are you getting that effect of having new players in the sport, but it doubles and triples itself when the new player is a big buyer usually. So you're getting like even more than just having more people playing disc golf, you're getting a second like fake bubble really there of buying patterns that just wouldn't normally happen. So what you can have there is maybe the bubble that burst has nothing to do with the players, or less to do with the players, and more to do with just their buying habits slowing down as time moves on. I mean, we recently talked to a guy in Texas who was flipping discs before he cared anything about disc golf during COVID, just because there was money in it. I mean, you talk about that. So like that was part of the bubble, and that has nothing to do with disc golf from a player standpoint. So I think there's a lot to that. Brody.
Word shopping. I don't have a name for it, but it's the opposite of rebuttal. So, I've been watching a lot of financial stuff recently. Caleb Hammer, Kelsey got me on this ChatGPT stuff, just going down the rabbit hole. And the number one thing I've learned is that when people make more money, aka stimulus checks, they just spend more money.
Yep.
Income creep.
It's true.
Yep.
Not a lot that live below the means. That
Brody, you do have some Caleb Hammer energy. I'll say that.
I could Brody financial audit. I mean,
I was about to say Brody financial before it even existed.
He'd be looking at my expenses like, what the heck is this? You just spent $50,000 on sports cars?
How much is this month on sports cars?
Funny. Definitely a lot to look at with the way that the offseason was shaking out there. A lot of people looking very doomsday. Other companies that maybe handled things better still have keeping a positive outlook. Definitely feels like there will be some more shakeups and some more companies maybe bottoming out, but tough to say. We'll see how things move on. Let's talk about a new entity in the world of disc golf, not one that has gone rock bottom, but one that is maybe pivoting. That is GK Skins. So GK Skins announced the formation of a new tour this offseason, the Go Throw Tour. Kind of a surprise move, kind of came out of nowhere. So do you see a world where it could coexist with the Disc Golf Pro Tour if both with both products having success, or does this road only end in competitive strife if GoThrow is able to gain some traction? Gary, what do you think?
I think when this was announced 2 months ago, everyone kind of got on that immediate, fantasy of like GoThrow versus the Pro Tour. Who's it going to be? It's going down. But both sides came out very quickly to kind of squash that situation. Jeff Spring popped onto a podcast. GoThrow came out with a statement trying to make it seem like, hey, everything's all good. We're going to exist together. But I don't think they're ever going to be able to coexist truly harmoniously for a few reasons. And, number one, GoThrow claims that all your favorite pros will be there. And these events are, for the most part, positioned well between tour stops. I check Google Maps for all of them. They all make sense travel-wise. It all works. However, if you're playing in a GoThrow event, you have to play on the weekend between your tour stops, which means you get less practice. There's more timing stress on your travel. And their last two events are the weeks before a playoff event and USDGC. What top pros are skipping practice for those and playing in those events? The answer, none that are taking those events seriously. They also originally had an event that clashed with U.S. Women's, but that was removed. And their Kayak Point event is on the same weekend as Kona Peach Day, but that should be fine. In a couple years, I think you're going to see some field dilution with these. Maybe these events are for the pros who are between 20th and 50th who need a big win, or the top guys, maybe they want to go snipe a big purse. But right now, the Pro Tour is still the tour. It's going to take a bit for GoThrow to challenge that level. And if they're dropping 20K for first, maybe they're going to get some people there. But for a disc golf fan like me, I'm just happy to see more disc golf, and competition breeds innovation.
Hey, yeah, true that. We could use some of that in the disc golf industry, maybe even on the tour front. Hunter, what do you think?
I think that both can exist at this current level, but GoThrow Tour can only be as big as the Pro Tour lets it, because basically the Pro Tour holds all the cards currently. And so who's to say that if the GoThrow Tour has success this year, the next year the Pro Tour comes out and says, hey, you're going to have to sign an exclusive right that you can only, if you're a Pro Tour card holder, you're only playing Pro Tour events. Make your decision. And then the GoThrow Tour doesn't exist as you know it. I also think that Gary's point is very true. If I'm Ricky Wysocki, or I guess I can't use him anymore, Paul McBeth, and I'm making $1 million a year, why on earth do I want to go play another tournament in between two weekends when I could have an off week with my family? So that's not going to be a sustainable model. So eventually, if the GoThrow Tour wants to get bigger and bigger, it's going to at some point have to compete with the Pro Tour. And when they're competing, they won't live as harmoniously. So I think the GoThrow Tour can get as big as the Pro Tour lets it get. But I think that the Pro Tour is the one that's in control as it exists right now. Yeah, I think it could be fine where you have your some notable guys that you know the names of that are outside of the top 20 can go play this, make some extra money. I think that's phenomenal. It's more coverage for us. It's more opportunity for them to make more money, be on the road. Everyone's happy. It takes risk off the Pro Tour. I think that's great. But if it wants to grow and get to a level where it's competing with the Pro Tour, I think the Pro Tour has all the power to stomp that out before it gets there. Would they actually do it? That's up to them. I think it would be a bad idea, though, if they let it grow.
Yeah, no doubt they hold the cards, but they've always been cautious in the past, so we'll see how they handle that. Hannah, how do you see this relationship between tours going as we move forward?
Yeah, I think to a degree they can coexist just fine. I mean, like Gary and Hunter kind of both pointed out, like GoPro is not as big as the Pro Tour right now, and maybe it won't ever be. But as a fan of disc golf too, I'm just stoked that there's even more pro disc golf to watch and that it's like literally every weekend now. And I think for a lot of us who want to see disc golf continue to grow both locally and professionally, the easiest way to do that is to just get more professional disc golf in front of more eyes. And I think GoPro Tour is doing a great job of that, especially with their platform being more, it seems, YouTube-based versus the Pro Tour on DGN mostly. And another point to that is GoPro Tour might appeal to a different crowd that does not want a DGN subscription. They don't care for the Pro Tour's commentators or whatever their reason might be for finding somewhere else to watch their disc golf. And I think, honestly, a little competition between them could be a good thing. I don't think it'd get overly dramatic or crazy because, like Hunter pointed out, the Pro Tour is in control. But you see multiple pro football leagues, you see multiple pro golf tours. So I don't see why disc golf can't experiment and test it out. And eventually, if new tours do find more success, maybe there's some type of merge that occurs and it creates a better product for everyone.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt. It's always the hope of competition that it ends in one united, like, stronger product. And we've seen that in other sports leagues, no doubt. Brody, what are your thoughts?
Well, we're going to go back to my bread and butter and talk about how tournament disc golf is pretty much gambling. You could simply easily set up a tour right now where you make the entry fees $1,000. You have a 100 people show up, and right there, bang, you have $100,000. Did I do that math right? $100,000. $100,000 purse. Golf does this all the time. There's tons of events throughout the entire United States that cost $1,500, $1,500 to enter in, so they can have big purses without actually having to find the money from sponsorships. Now, disc golf, the Pro Tour, a little bit different because there is some money being thrown in there as well, but it's still like 60-40 at a lot of these events. And I think my biggest concern right now is obviously GoPro, they got to throw the money to get someone to show up, right? If they just have like a normal A tier, like the winner gets a $1,300. I think what Gary said is 100% fact. No top pros showing up to try to do that in between actual tour events. So my big thing though is I think they got to go do something different. I don't think if you just do the same thing with a worse field at worse courses when people are already maybe tired of watching. We all know, like, when there's back-to-back-to-back-to-back disc golf tournaments, there is a little bit of like a, all right. So I think they need to do something different because I don't think they both can coexist well at the level that they're trying to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're going to run out of money.
Right. Well, and you know, at the end of the day, yeah, the players will be where the money is. And obviously you do have certain players who maybe that isn't going to be a huge motivator, but and you also got to remember too, a large part of the talented field, the Gannon Burrs, even our best player right now, are just, when they're out there on the road, they just want to play no matter what. It's just what they do. So right now, like everybody kind of said, it was the right time to strike with this product, and it will work because there's really nothing the money is there. So the players will show up. It's between the tour events, but at some point something has to give.
And I don't know if you can say it will work though.
I mean, it'll exist.
It will exist.
Yes. They have funding somehow coming in, but at a certain point, if they're on their fifth event and they're like, guys, every event we do, we're losing $25,000.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're not seeing it grow.
Right.
You got to pull the plug.
One of the things that I didn't have time to get into, but I think might be a big benefit for disc golf out of this is that the Pro Tour might learn through GoPro that they don't have to do everything. You know, the GoPro guys, they've got that skins format down to a science. That's a really special thing they have there. And so maybe they're going to learn through all this. We can't host big event after big event after big event like the tour does, because we can't get the money. But if we can turn this into maybe two or three really interesting stops at some of courses that may not be as accessible to the pro tour because of like where they're located or anything like that, but they can keep the skins thing going and they can keep that general vibe that Go Throw has always had, that will turn into its own special thing, and that'll probably alleviate the pro tour from trying to have to add in a bunch of fluff that they're not good at and let them focus on the things that are, you know, that they are good at.
I think one thing to watch is let's say that this Ganon Burr does start playing these events, and so does Ricky, and so does whatever, right? And so
I think Ganon is playing the first one.
You have essentially the same product from a viewer standpoint, right? If you get the big five there, the big five, like top five players, viewer wise, we're not going to really notice that much because lead card's probably going to have a few of them and one or two people that you know the name of.
Yep.
So if that's happening and the viewership happens, then what could hurt the Pro Tour almost immediately is if advertising's cheaper with Go Throw, and then I'm Foundation or I'm Infinite or I'm Discraft or I'm whoever, and all of a sudden I can pay $15,000 to advertise with the Pro Tour, or I can pay $5,000 and get the same exposure with Go Throw.
Yep.
Why am I throwing $15,000 at the Pro Tour? And then all of a sudden that could immediately hurt the Pro Tour in the short term. Will that happen? I don't know. We've gotten emails to advertise with the Go Throw Tour already. We haven't pulled the trigger on any of it because it's a lot of question marks right now.
Yeah.
But if the viewership lines up and it's cheaper for more exposure or similar exposure, then companies are going to make that decision unless they just want to support the Pro Tour.
Yeah, I kind of agree with Hunter. And like, I think letting the product gain momentum is dangerous because talk about viewer fatigue too. Like, I want people, you know, Hannah, you mentioned there will be people who are excited to have disc golf every week, but viewer fatigue is real. And I don't want there to be an option for, you know, my viewers to get a fix in that other weekend. I want them to be even more excited for the next Pro Tour event that's coming along. And it feels kind of like a handout at this point, right? They're not putting any restrictions on this, at least for now. So they're just saying, we're okay with this happening. You know, we're playing the good guys for now, but at some point they might have to play the villain.
But I think Hannah's best point, I think, or the best point of the thing, I think, was Hannah's, where she said that they're focusing more on the distribution through YouTube. And so maybe the thing that's different from the Disc Golf Pro Tour isn't necessarily what's on the field, but how people are consuming it. Mm-hmm. I could see that actually doing well for them. But again, at the end of the day, they're throwing a whole lot of money at these things in hopes that people watch. And if people don't watch.
Yeah. Well, if the Eagles Crossing guy's behind it, then there might just be it doesn't matter infinite. If you lose money.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, obviously it's not infinite, but like the money pool is not infinite, but he poured millions into Eagles Crossing.
Yeah.
And right. Like, you know, you're not making millions back in this lifetime from that course. So it might just be a situation where it's like, hey, I love disc golf. I've got boatloads of money and I'm happy to lose $1 million a year to run an awesome tour and do things the way I want to do it.
Yeah, I got to put that money in a money market. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. That's what I'm sitting there thinking. You know, is you're investing that thing in the S&P 500.
and back to the regulation thing, I find it interesting that they have every single pro under the sun coming out with a video. I'm waiting for your video, Brody, coming out telling everyone to subscribe to Go Throw to get them to 150,000 subscribers.
How would I do that?
I don't know. I'm just, you know, but I mean, like they even have what? Videos of like, you know, Yuli and Big Germ. So who are representatives of Jomez Pro. So that's a very interesting thing that there seems to be like this friendliness between these things, but who knows how long
they'll last. Things aren't as chummy behind the scenes. I don't know that. And I'm just speaking imagining.
There's gotta be some frustrations.
Steve Dodge one time in 2016 as the Disc Golf Pro Tour cut out Jomez and there was a lot of backlash. So we gotta be nice here, but let's keep our finger on the pulse here and make sure we do what we got to do. I would imagine that's what's going on behind the scenes.
Did a lot of NBA players wear Jordans back when Jordan was playing? Does anyone know that answer?
Probably not.
I don't know.
Probably
like
not.
I don't. I'm trying
most
to think.
Most Jordans
of other...
have come out post his playing career. So
I'm trying to think too. When Tiger Woods was playing, like I don't remember seeing anyone wearing Tiger Woods hats.
No.
Like any other pros wearing Tiger Woods hats.
Where are you getting to here?
I'm just saying that happens a lot in disc golf. Like, you have your own personal hat and you're wearing another player's hat.
What is
how
that?
How does this tie to the tour?
Well, I'm just saying, buddy. There's a lot. Yeah, there's a lot of hanky panky.
You're about the team spirit. You're.
No, I'm not, Gary. What the heck? Team spirit. if GoThrow goes the team route, I'm gonna be subscribe. Get up to 150,000. Let's go.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. All right, moving on. So we got to talk about probably the biggest and maybe most surprising player move of the offseason. And that was Ricky Wysocki to Discraft after leaving Dynamics. So what I want to know is, with the addition of Rick, Discraft has undoubtedly created the most star-powered roster of all time. Feel free to dispute that if you think otherwise. What are the pros and cons of this model? Do you see this working out for Discraft, or is a strategy pivot not far down the road with all those star players? Hunter, what do you think?
Well, I think that there's a lot of pros for Discraft in this situation, both literally and figuratively. but there's definitely some cons. I think the biggest cons for the players are, you know, basically the cannibalization of Discraft has went with the team route, the team store. You know, Brody has a store, Chris Dickerson has a store, Ezra Robbins, everyone has a store. And within those stores, there's a lot of the same products that are custom stamped with that player. And that's a lot for lower tier players. That's a lot of their revenue generators. So where this hurts is you now have Ricky coming in. You now have Ezra Robinson coming in. Corey Ellis, see ya, you're off the elite team. And all of a sudden now, why am I buying an Andrew Presnell buzz when I also have a Chris Dickerson buzz, a Paul McBeth buzz, a Brody Smith buzz, an Ezra Robinson buzz? At some point, I don't need any more buzzes, right? So I think that is the con for the player. Now for Discraft, where the con comes in, because the pro is, yes, they're going to net move more plastic. Like, that's just, it will net move more. But the con comes in is there is a point of diminishing return where you're not earning new fans. You're just trying to sell to the same fans you already had more times. There is a point where that has tipped. Has it already tipped? You got to assume so, because they had a big team last year and you're just paying more and more players. So at some point, your payroll goes up and up and up and your sales level out, where now we're just adding more players and our sales aren't skyrocketing. I think they might have already hit that. Their books will be the only thing that knows. So overall, I think it's good for Discraft. They will move more plastic, but there are some possible business hiccups where this could have to be blown up in a few years.
Yeah. They're going to find out for sure. All right, Hannah, what do you think about this Discraft move?
Well, the joke going around is that since picking up Ricky, Discraft has assembled the Avengers. And that's an incredible analogy, but like the Avengers also taught us, the strongest teams still have a lot of infighting. I fully believe that Discraft, in their incredible capabilities, have a plan for all these stars. But I worry that with having so many household names to push and promote, like Connor kind of pointed out, their marketing could get oversaturated and leave the consumer overwhelmed with options, with names, that are everything that's being thrown at them. Overall, Discraft might gain some market share, but it could come at the cost of the lower names on the elite team. For example, every DGN ad cannot be for a different Discraft player. So another point is that Dynamic wouldn't have let Ricky go if he was making them money. This means that Ricky either took a lower deal with Discraft, or Discraft is betting that they can use Ricky's star power better than Dynamic did. And I'd like to bet that Discraft's marketing budget allotted Ricky to be maybe bigger than Dynamic's was last year. In the end, it'll come down a lot to how many Ricky fans Discraft can turn into loyalists. Because if the UltiWorld survey responses are true, that there are people who really buy 500 discs a year, you don't really need many of those before Ricky's contract starts becoming profitable.
Yeah, that's the bet for sure, is how quickly can you pay
he
off
that deal? He shelves it and fill themselves.
Yeah, Brody's gonna have to get the calculator out to figure that one out.
He didn't use that calculator in the last round when he was trying to do.
Well, Brody, numbers. get to your argument. What do you think about the deal? What is the calculator saying?
You only need 133 people to buy 500 of Ricky's discs.
That's not that bad.
And there you go. Is that right?
Probably don't spend any more time on
133. Oh, okay. Yeah, we'll move on. I definitely didn't. Yeah, okay. So this is a really interesting one because, one, first off, for the longest time, you know, you have this, you know, and Yuli said this to me, a lot of people have said this to me, of where it's the idea that, like, you know, rising tide lifts all sinking ships or whatever, right? Whatever the thing is, of where, you know, people are telling me, hey, Brody, if this random person on Discraft that has no connection with you at all wins a world championship, you're going to be racking in the dough. I've never understood that analogy. Maybe it makes sense if, like, the person has, like, your disc in their bag and they use it during the world championship. But this is going to be an interesting one. Now, another big question is anyone doing market research? Is anyone going out there and looking at, like, who are Ricky's fans? Do a lot of Ricky's fans already buy Discraft stuff? Or are Ricky's fans, like, super anti Paul Macbeth and are like, I would not touch Discraft with a 15-foot stick? And then now they're thinking, okay, now he's on Discraft. Now we have a huge new fan base that have never bought Discraft. I don't know how to do market research. I don't know any the first part of that. But it makes you wonder. You hear it talked about all the time in these companies. Is disc golf doing it? I don't know.
Brody learned like 20 new words in the last week. He is just unloaded. That was actually a very good point, though. Like, that is completely valid. You know, that's a huge part of this equation is maybe the Paul Rick thing. And, like, maybe there are a lot of Rick fans who are like, well, I'm not going to buy any of the Paul stuff. Hunter's one of them. So, yeah, he's been outspoken about that.
No, Gary, I will buy Ricky stuff. I will not buy Ricky stamped Paul stuff. That just doesn't feel right.
Wait, are they doing that?
They're not, but Trevor's saying they're going to.
I said on the podcast, just think about how quickly they're going to turn around a Ricky Raptor six claw, like, collab stamp. Is it just claw. Like, it makes sense?
And I mean, the amount of hanky panky going on is just insane.
I about had my two co-hosts vomiting at the thought of it.
Keep your hands above the table, Gary.
What do you think, Gary?
I think they got more pros now than AMA questions answered by Nate Heinold, which is a lot. But a couple things to address. You know, in the survey, it did show that people who listed Ricky as their favorite player, only 10% of them listed Dynamic as their favorite manufacturer. So I think there is a market share of Ricky fans who are ready for new plastic and new molds. And also, Ricky said that he will see if he makes the same amount of money. I think he definitely took a big pay cut, but Discraft put some serious performance incentives and things in there for him. But to me, the pros and cons are things like that perception of dominance. Their highest level team has 44 combined major wins. And I think it's going to create better opportunities for collaboration amongst their team and opportunities for disc sales. But the cons, the two big cons for me are, you know, one we already said, market saturation is a big one. The perceived decline in sales amongst the industry, flattening out of that. At some point, you can only recapture the same customer so many times. But product cannibalization is the biggest problem here because there's a lot of big names in this team, and the big names want to sell the popular discs. I mean, how many Tour Series custom-run versions of the same mold can the market tolerate? And Ricky said that he understands there's a seniority factor in this, but what happens when he starts winning? Is he going to go to Bob and say, I deserve more runs of this disc than Adam Hammes or Chris Dickerson? So I think if they have a successful year, that's great. But if they don't, they're going to be shearing off some people because, like the Golden State Warriors, they have a great couple years with everyone there, and then the money's not going to make sense after a while.
Yeah.
But I think that's okay. Yeah. Like if Ricky's selling stuff, and let's say he's like all of a sudden $200,000 is rolling in, and that $200,000 usually went to these other three people, I think Discraft's completely fine with getting rid of those other three people and just keeping Ricky.
Well, I think it would make logical sense, but would they do it?
Right. Yeah.
Historically, disc golf teams or disc golf companies, and you can look at this as a great, great thing of disc golf, but historically, disc golf companies have prioritized their teams and their people. Not all. We won't take shots, but a lot of companies have, where it's like, hey, we're willing to just make less money so that such and such family can have food on their table. Like, such and such can actually pursue.
They do that way more than they probably should as a business.
If you're just looking numbers, and then that stuff doesn't make sense. But what it does do is, Discraft is a team that has done that historically over and over and over. And what happens? They're very well respected, both on the player side and on the fan side. Dynamic Discs used to do that. They don't do it anymore. We'll talk about them in a little bit. They don't do it anymore. And all of a sudden, now the whole, you know, market shift has a different opinion on them, and now it's hurting them. So yeah. I do think there is some value to just, hey, we back our players, even if it doesn't make financial sense. But there is a point where you can't always do that. You know?
How many people took this AltiWorld poll or 10,000
people started it, and roughly 7,000 people finished it.
That is 10,000 people started, and how many finished?
Roughly 7,000 people finished it.
It's a pretty good sample size.
How many people vote for the PDGA? Do you have any idea?
To be honest, less than that. I don't know if they published that. Not many PDGA members end up voting.
Man, that's not a lot.
I will say, on the market research side, I was talking to someone who's outside of disc golf but is very interested in disc golf. Again, I won't name drop because I don't know how these conversations are allowed to be public.
Who is this guy, Trevor? What is this?
Just say you're talking to Mark Cuban.
It's his son. It's his son.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Luca. But no, he was saying that he was shocked when he was looking at disc golf as to how little market research there is and how like much people assume they know without any actual data to back up what they know, and how little a lot of disc golf companies care that they don't actually know that data. Coming from an outside world looking in, he was like, I was just kind of like baffled that that's a thing of just like, I think this is true, but I don't actually have any data to back it up, and I don't really care to find it.
Well, I think a lot of them have, they go based off of their own customer data, but they don't know the market as a whole. And therefore you're not going to grow a ton if you can't take in what the entire market is doing rather than just your customers and catering to them. You got to find the balance there.
Stay with me on this.
All right. I'm here. Can't wait.
It's as if you just saw a building and you're like, this building is perfect to open up my burger shop. And you didn't do the research that the community around that burger shop were all from India.
Okay. You could have went vegan, but that works too.
How would you know that?
I don't know. Same research.
I guess so.
You pay a guy inside.
I was expecting you to go to vegan, but I...
you get a job at the burger shop.
I've never been vegan, but I have been to India.
Okay, that makes sense.
Okay, fair enough. You've done the research.
Yeah. We walked into a Indian pizza restaurant.
Oh,
big mistake.
We walked right back out.
Big mistake.
Brody recommended it, and then Brody, we walked in, he looked at both of us, he said, this isn't the same place I came to before. We got to get out of here.
they initially, it wasn't very, like, you know, you walked in, and it just smelled like a pizza shop. Now it kind of smelled like an Indian pizza shop. Like
Indian spices?
Yes. And I don't do well with spices. I looked at Hunter. I was like, we are not going to be able to eat this pizza.
Yeah. This I was looking for a plain cheese pizza. And I was like,
that's really funny.
This pizza is going to be way too spicy. I can tell you that right now.
Yeah. Got to go home to those bug potatoes.
All right. So we got one final question for our final round here. So we're just going to kind of sum everything up there. So a lot of things happened in the off season, but I want to know just now, who, whether that be player, manufacturer, company, whatever entity you want to use, is your biggest winner and biggest loser of the entire off season. So a lot to choose from here. Get creative, as creative as you want. Hannah, you get to go first. So biggest winner and biggest loser of the off season.
Yeah, so for biggest winner, I think Discraft is an obvious answer, but I think there's another one that's almost on the same level, and so I'm choosing MVP. MVP, by signing Big Germ, they now have one of the top commentators in disc golf on their team, which is a huge asset, not to mention he's also one of the most beloved personalities on tour and a bit of a legend. They also signed Mari Vilman, who is currently the highest-rated player in Estonia, so it looks like they're trying to capture more of the European marketplace. And speaking of Europeans, let's not forget that Silva Saarinen signed a 4-year extension with them. Between that and her high ceiling, that's going to have a huge impact on the FPO scene this year. For me, MVP has just a super diverse team. They have the forehand specialist / commentator now. They have the backhand specialist / world champion, the down-to-earth German superstar with perhaps the biggest disc golf social media reach, and the quirky American superstar who has the best name for a disc golfer and also has a huge social media reach, just to name a few. My loser for this year is got to be Dynamic Discs. obviously they lost a lot of star power with both Kona and Ricky leaving, but it feels like every week they're just caught up in more and more bad press, controversy, or speculation. And it's hard to change public opinion and gain momentum again once your reputation and your actions have been questioned so many times.
Yeah, no doubt. Dynamic, definitely a popular answer there for the biggest loser of the offseason, no doubt about that. Brody, who's your biggest winner and biggest loser?
Hannah, how many discs do you think Silva sells? Do you think she sells a lot of discs?
I think for an FPO player, she sells a lot of discs. And I think for being FPO on Team MVP, she's probably sells a lot of discs.
Yeah, I feel like she's one of those people that her skill level doesn't match with her disc sales. I get that vibe. That would be my guess. I think she's way better at disc golf than how many discs she sells, but you know, that can always change. I'm going to go the same route with Hannah here. I think I'm going to go combo MVP and Big Germ, because I think obviously MVP, this was probably the best pickup, I want to say, because I think his Big Germ's audience, and again, there's all kind of just speculation about like a person's personality and who like their fans are, but I don't think he has a lot of crossover with like Eagles audience or Simon's audience or James Conrad's audience. So I think you are getting a lot of people that were probably buying, was it the Thunderbird? Is that what he threw a lot of? I think at Innova. I think you're probably getting a lot of people that were buying his Innova stuff that will start buying probably his MVP stuff. Also, he's kind of a nerd when it comes to the disc technology stuff. So I think that fits in really well. And I think the loser here is Dynamic Disc, because as small of a community disc golf is and as niche of a sport that it is, like people's perception of you is everything. And I think right now they're just the lowest of the lows with some of the moves they've made this offseason.
Yeah,
in the last couple years.
Yeah. People have definitely made up their minds in that, right?
Gary, are they lower than Lone Star? That's a legitimate question.
I don't think so.
They are more in the limelight, but people's perception is definitely
Lone Star. People are more likely to still throw dynamic discs
than Lone Star.
Okay. You got to be careful talking about Lone Star, man. The selective people on Twitter they'll go right to the neck.
That's fine. Come after me.
They'll do it. Gary, biggest winner and biggest loser of the offseason.
So this small fan represents how little of a fan I was of the previous two guest answers. No, actually, in all reality, I just got cut off at the knees by Hannah there. All of my best points, boom, she nailed them. A couple things I'll add to that, to the MVP thing, is that Conrad and Vilman are locked up till 2026. Eagle, Saarinen, and Gyro Germ are locked up till 2028, and Simon's till 2032. So if anything, MVP is the winner because they've bought themselves 4 years of sustainability where they'll be able to sit back, watch the market, make money, and be able to make some good decisions for where their next step is. I think that's going to be a big thing for them, especially with having two better presences in the European market. But the biggest loser is definitely Dynamic because of all the things that happened. But I'm also going to – I'll pivot a little bit here and say Prodigy is a big loser because they lost, you know, the Robinson brothers. That's a 1-2 punch that's pretty crazy. And they lost Kale. And Kale brought in something that was not just playing disc golf. He brought in course design, event creation, a culture. And so – And hearing every interview with Will Schusterich, or he just doesn't seem to understand the mistakes that were made with those players, it feels like no lessons were learned in 2024. So I'm going to say they're my new biggest losers for 2024.
Minus one for talking trash about Will Schusterich.
Whoa. Yeah, we don't do that here.
We love you, Will. Yeah, you must not know where you are, Gary, man. It's the wrong place to start trashing Will Schusterich. Unbelievable. Have I heard any of those interviews? Not one, but I'm going to go in
the market research.
All right, Hunter, go ahead.
I'm actually excited because somehow both of my answers are mainly on the table here. Biggest winner, how did no one take this? Isaac Robinson, because he was able to, in this era of disc golf, land a 3-year, $500,000 deal where he's guaranteed $175,000 a year. And obviously they're expected it to be $300,000 plus. Who knows if it'll actually get there. But props to him and his agent, because I mean, I thought six figures was going to be very great. And I thought it was gonna be like a 1-year, $100,000 deal. For there to be a deal that was like, hey, we can actually release the numbers of this, That's phenomenal. So I think Isaac Robinson has to be the biggest winner of the offseason here. Brody can break out the calculator on that bad boy. Secondarily, I do have to agree with Gary's pivot that I'm going to go with Prodigy as the biggest loser, not because of what actually happened this offseason, but because of the position they're left in, being that you have House of Discs is still backing Dynamic. So Dynamic is in a bad public perception place. A lot of it actually is because of House of Discs. But if Gannon Burr and Latitude 64 and Chris and Tatar succeed, there's at least still money in the pool that can still supplement what's going on at Dynamic. Prodigy lost everyone. They lost Kale LaVisca, who was Mr. Prodigy. He, you know, from my perspective, him and Will were kind of the two guys. They lost both of their star players in Isaac and Ezra. And if you want to go back, they lost Kevin Jones and Vino Makula earlier in the year. And on top of that, people have a certain stigma about their plastic after the Gannon Burr lawsuit basically put allegedly flashing in the actual lawsuit. So they have a much bumpier road ahead of them. So I'm gonna say they are actually the biggest loser.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely two companies on the low. And funny enough, that's exactly what we're going to get into in our final topic here. Hunter and Hannah, the two H's here, moving on to the final round.
Gary, maybe you'll respect me next time.
Yeah, Hunter. Maybe Hunter will get the orange color back for next episode.
We'll see. Have it. He can have it.
And yeah, let's move on to our final topic here. All right. So we just talked about this, but now we, you know, we understand the problems. We're looking for a solution. So with both Dynamic Discs and Prodigy Discs, with them both in need of a hard restart after a tough 2024, which brand do you think is more likely to rise back to their former levels of success? Why? So feel free to elaborate on why you think the one will, and maybe get into why you think the other one has a tougher road ahead. Hunter, you kind of already alluded to maybe your hand. Do you want to go first or second since you have the lead?
I would like to go first.
That makes sense. Go for it. 2 minutes.
Okay, I'm actually probably going to go a route that you don't expect here, because I'm going to say that Prodigy Discs is actually more likely to rise back to their former level of success, mainly because of what happened to Dynamic. If you look at basically where Dynamic was at its peak, at its best, when a disc golfer was in control, when they were treating each other as family, when it felt small business and you fell in love with not just the product, but the people behind it. That has all blown up. So Dynamic Discs is now corporate, right? You have House of Discs. There is a stigma in disc golf against corporate. There's a stigma in the world against corporate. And that just feels like Dynamic Discs brand. So it's going to be very, very hard for them to get back to disc golfers are in control. No one bought that. It's going to be very hard for them to actually have that small, you know, business feel. On the flip side, whether his interviews are great or not, according to Gary, Will Schustrick is in front of the camera, left and right, promoting his small business, essentially, is what it feels like, right? Like Prodigy now feels like a more grassroots startup that you already kind of know and love a few of their molds. And as if he's able to actually produce better quality product and he's able to actually do more and more, it has that I'm supporting someone who's been in disc golf since the very beginning, who's been in disc golf, a multiple time major champion. He's been out there on the road. People a lot of times love Will Schustrick, whether they like Prodigy or not. So with him at the helm, I think they're in a better position to regain where they formerly were and be able to even overtake Dynamic simply because of the feeling of the company. Now, I do think Prodigy has more of a bumpy road ahead of them. I think they have more ground they have to make up, but I do think they are more likely and positioned better to make that ground up.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. I definitely get that. I think you're right. It does almost feel like a small business right now. It feels like something that's been crumpled and is trying to rebound and take on a new look. So we'll see if people are able to are willing to buy that, essentially. Hannah, go ahead. You got 2 minutes. What do you think? Which company do you like their odds better?
Yeah, so I'm going a similar vein as Hunter. I definitely think Prodigy has the best chance. Dynamic, their reputation and just their the public perception of them right now is just so damaged that I'll be surprised to see if they're back on top by the end of the season. But so Prodigy, over the offseason, I was really surprised to hear that they lost Kale because he was so synonymous with the brand. And we all knew that it wasn't a matter of if, but when the Robinson brothers were both going to leave. But despite all the shakeups, they still have some pretty good players on their team, like Chantel Bedinsky, Luke Humphreys, and they added in this offseason Jake Hebenheimer and AJ and Deanne Carey. All of them have had moments of promise throughout their careers. But I think there's two big reasons why Prodigy will get back on top. One, they signed Gavin Rathbun, and two, by promoting Will Schustrick to CEO. Gavin has a huge ceiling and had a great season last year with a few top 20s, some top 10s, and he podiumed twice, taking third at DDO and second at OTB. Even though he's coming into this year with a new bag, I feel like he has the skills to definitely make his mark on the season and turn into a true star for Prodigy. And even though I wasn't following disc golf when Will was actively playing, his reputation in the sport is really hard to miss. From what I've heard and seen, he seems to have a huge heart for the sport and helping it grow into something even more special than it already is. And he's also been synonymous with the Prodigy brand for so long. And as a former touring pro, he has some firsthand experience and knowledge that a lot of other CEOs don't have regarding players and just how to address the business and discs and everything from a player's perspective. In his recent interviews that I've listened to, maybe differing from Gary's perspective, to me, it sounds like he already has a picture of what he wants things to look like. And like all good leaders, he doesn't just believe in his picture, but he believes that he has a team that also believes in the picture, and he believes in their abilities to achieve that image. I truly think he's Prodigy's best chance for changing the narrative, and I'm excited to see what he does.
Well said. Well said. Yeah, I do think in the end, like you mentioned, Dynamic has suffered a loss of their company image and what they were brought to success with, whereas Prodigy kind of always struggled with having one in the first place. And if anything, they've reset back to maybe the best part of what they had, which is a likable player who seems to be at the helm. And maybe kind of doing a hard reset. So I do think that yes, ultimately that the only thing Dynamic has, Hunter mentioned kind of in his last point, is really the backing of larger investors. But other than that, feels like a hopeless brand right now. But Hunter ends up on top today. Great show from Hunt. Some compelling arguments. Well done. Opening up the season with a W. Anything to say, Hunt?
I think I want to stay where I'm at. I want to be blue. I want to be forgotten about, disrespected. I think that's where I'm at my best. So I would like to petition that I stay third place, Blue Hunter. And I think I'm on my revenge tour. Much like Standing Brody, we haven't seen the comeback of that, but Blue Hunter hasn't lost. Something to think about.
That is something to think about. If you want to give us things to think about and submit topics for this season's debate night, you can scan the QR code on the screen there. It's a fresh season. Fresh topics are sure to pop up. If there's anything that the next episode, I'll give you a little tip. Next episode, we'll try to be focusing on season preview. So feel free to submit topics that are related to that. Brody?
I'll leave you all with this.
I can't wait.
Brody throws the disc, flying through the open sky, precision and grace. A disc off IQ.
Is that Chat GPT, Brody?
he's big on AI right now, apparently.
Oh, my gosh. Remember, you can audition. Link is in the description. Also, go to Instagram, vote. If you think I got it wrong today, if you don't think Hunter deserved a win, I think he had a very compelling performance. But you can vote for anybody because there was a lot of strong shows today from our contestants. But make sure to check us out next week. We'll be here at the same place, and we'll be here all season long on Debate Night. See you then.